So it's time for films. In studio with me are reviewers Chris Wasser and Sarah Taff Maguire. Stanley Kubrick's classic interpretation of Stephen King's novel The Shining gets a sequel in the form of Dr. Sleep, starring Ewan McGregor as the grown-up young boy Denny. Ken Loach returns with another story from the overlooked edges of society, this time a comment on neoliberal Britain and the gig economy in the form of Sorry We Missed You, and a comedy drama from debut director Paul Downs Calizzo about an overweight woman's determination to compete in the New York City Marathon. It's called Brittany Runs a Marathon. But let's start with Dr. Sleep. Sarah, obviously Stanley Kubrick's directed the screen version of the original Stephen King novel, The Shining. Is this a follow-up to Kubrick's screen version, or is it a film all of its own based on the novel?
It's actually both. So it is a follow-up. It does pick up with Danny, who's now in his later years. He's played by Ewan McGregor. So in that regard, it is a continuation of the storyline, but it is made totally differently. There's a lot of explanation done. There's a lot of flitting from past to future. It's not like the kind of pared back, score heavy thriller that The Shining was. But so both.
So, Chris, Stanley Kubrick's and, well, Stephen King fell out with Stanley Kubrick's.
He did.
Over this, didn't he?
Yeah.
Because he wasn't loyal to the book. He decided to go off and make his own film.
Yeah, I think Stephen King said at one stage that the only adaptation of, film adaptation of his book that he really hated was The Shining. And the main reason for that was that, you know, the film does deviate from the book in spectacular fashion. And that Kubrick took this, I always thought The Shining, the book, was more of a story about domestic abuse, about alcoholism. And, you know, it just so happened to have a supernatural twist, where Stanley Kubrick's film was more of this like demented, haunted hotel yarn where, you know, Jack Nicholson just dials it up to 11, goes crazy, chases after his family with an axe. That said, I do like both.
Wonderful summary of The Shining.
Yeah, there you go.
So then we pick up, as Sarah says, we're with Danny. This is the young boy who has the shining, which is a gift.
That's it. He has telekinetic gifts. He has psychic abilities. We pick up on him when he is an adult. And at this stage, he is a shell of a man. He's quite a tortured soul. He's clearly traumatized by the events of the original story. And his life is in a bit of a rut. He's also a raging alcoholic like his father. So he decides after one too many hangovers that he needs to sort himself out. And he gets on a bus. He arrives in a New Hampshire town. And once there, he makes a friend named Billy, played by Cliff Curtis, and he's a fellow addict. He kind of sees this guy needs some help, so he brings him to some AA meetings. He gets him a job. He starts working in a hospice where he actually, and this is where we get the title from, he actually starts to use his gifts to help those near death's door, to comfort them with his psychic abilities. And at the same time, you know, parallel to that, he also starts this, I think he refers to it at one stage as a pen pal, this sort of shining telepathic pen pal relationship with a 13-year-old girl across the country. Her name is Abra, and she also has abilities like him. And then at the same time as well, you also have a vampire cult. I suppose they're like vampires.
It could be monsters either, or maybe even zombies. Yeah. Whatever you want, whatever you have in yourself.
Yeah, they're monsters. It's
Rose the Hat.
Rose the Hat, yes, played by Rebecca Ferguson. And they travel the country. They've been around for centuries. And they literally feed on the souls of those with the shine, particularly children. So this gang, they pick up on the scent of both Abra and Danny, and they go after them.
So, Sarah, is there any remnants of the original Shining film?
Yeah, plenty. So in a way that I feel is quite lighthearted and sort of slagging their lesser version that they are making with Dr. Sleep. So there is an actual return to the Overlook Hotel. I feel there's sort of an acknowledgement that perhaps fans of The Shining, as they're watching, will be like fist bump, be like, here we go. Oh yeah, they're going back here. And in a way that is actually...
Does it look like the original hotel?
It does. And they're literal remakes of iconic scenes from The Shining, but with Ewan McGregor's face instead of Jack Nicholson's. We also have, quite jarringly,
is he partial to an axe?
He is. Well, yeah, he, maybe. You know, he needs must. You know, okay, needs must. So he is, and we have some replaying and remaking of scenes. We have the iconic scene in the Golden Room in the bar, and we've Ewan McGregor and a fake. Jack Nicholson, sorry, look-alike stand-in, come in. We have Rose the Hat, and and Danny and Abra running around the maze. So we have a lot of recreation of the old scenes.
All right. So is that a flashback for Danny to what he remembers himself? Or
yeah. A little bit of both. It's kind of, you know, without giving too much away, the characters need to go back to the Overlook. This story needs to go back to the Overlook in order for Danny to tie up some supernatural loose ends in his life. But unfortunately, although the film does, the writer and director of this is Mike Flanagan, and he's no stranger to the Stephen King adaptations or horror movies. And although he does restage these, you know, sometimes shot for shot scenes from The Shining, it doesn't ever look like it's trying to compete with The Shining. It almost looks like it's trying to pay homage in a way that maybe college students would. I mean, I felt like I was watching this student Halloween party taking place in a hotel.
Yes, you said it sounded like a send-up as well, didn't
you? Yeah. I mean, it's also quite a lot like many other TV films and movies. I mean, like, the thing about Stealing Screams is the plot of Monsters, Inc. So we have also, you know, this group of travelling monsters literally were like that 90s TV show Are You Afraid of the Dark, with this funny sort of hat and the way they masked around the place. Mike Flanagan, the director, wrote the adaptation for The Haunting of Hill House and directed that as well. And I mean, it borrows more than a little from that, this idea of actually, and there's actually a bit of a retelling of the original Shining story. It's decided that that house has haunted Danny, and that is how he is haunted and developed his modern alcoholism now. So it's kind of the idea of The Haunting of Hill House in this film. So very much also like Stranger Things, there's a nosebleed when you do some psychological things. There's this ability to walk around each other's heads. So it's a lot of different things. It seems like a homage to the like recent horror.
So I'm not too sure whether it sounds like an awful mess or he's having wonderful fun. He's so in control, Flanagan, that he is having fun with The Shining and making his own film.
Yeah, I think he's having a bit too much fun, but at the expense of the audience at one stage, because it's an impossible task adapting or making a follow-up to both the film and the book, because they are entirely different beasts. And I don't think he pulls it off, which is a shame, because I do think there is a good movie bubbling under the surface here. There is a good concept in there. And Ewan McGregor is fine. Rebecca Ferguson is actually quite delightful as the villain of the piece. But I think the flaw is from the flaws are there from the opening scene, which is that you're making a sequel by exploring the most insignificant part of the original story, which was the boy with The Shining. I mean, you could take the boy with The Shining out of The Shining and it would still be just as good. That was never the most interesting
because
part
about
that story.
Jack Nicholson,
it was always
mad.
About alcoholism. It was about this writer going mad, and you know, he was struggling to get over the abuse he'd suffered at the hands of his own father and going back to his grandfather. That they were always the more interesting aspects. With this, it's just a bit of a ghost train ride, and I just found it a bit of a mess. I found the scenes in the Overlook Hotel, which do take up a large chunk of the film, quite unpleasant, because it just felt as though it looked as though everyone was having great fun, but I wasn't. I felt as though they were just being insulting or offensive to the original film. So I really didn't enjoy this.
Okay, and what did you give it in stars?
I just found that, look, I wasn't angry with the film, I was just disappointed by it. I don't think, as I said, there is a good film in there somewhere. It just feels like the whole thing put together. And also, it's never scary, Kay. And that's a big problem for
a
horror film. It's never scary.
Oh, God, I screamed. Look, I'm sorry to admit, I screamed out loud.
So you definitely liked it more.
Yeah,
but
well,
then, of course, maybe you're just very precious about the original, Chris.
I might be, but I also know a good horror when I see one, and this was not it. I found it just completely unnecessary. So I'm going to have to go with 2 stars.
Stars.
Well, apparently I'm very easily scared, and you know what? I love horror, but I'd be happy to admit to that. And there are plenty of screams in the screening I went to, so I'm sticking by my comment that it's scary. I'm saying 3 out of 5 stars. It's not a great film, but it was loads of fun. I enjoyed being afraid. I enjoyed Ewan McGregor and Abra chasing after these Dracula hybrid people, tracking them down. I liked seeing a rethinking of The Shining, and I was fine. I didn't feel the memory was insulting because it was a very different film. So 3 out of 5 stars for me.
So 3 out of 5 from Sarah and 2 out of 5 from Chris for Dr. Sleep. And let's hope Stephen King is happy with it, which is all that matters. So now we have Sorry We Missed You, the latest film from Ken Loach, who has again collaborated with the screenwriter Paul Laverty for a cautionary tale of the way we live now. Chris, give us the outline.
The outline is that Chris Hitchin plays Ricky Turner, who is a struggling father of two. He's originally from Manchester, but he and his family live in Newcastle. The backstory is that Ricky and his family, they kind of lost everything in the financial crisis. And he used to be a construction worker. He was making a lot of money, himself and his wife, Abby, played by Debbie Honeywood. But they bought a new home, they lost it, and now they're renting Newcastle and they're struggling to make ends meet. He has just picked up a new job as a delivery driver with a company whose sort of motto is that, you know, you don't work for us, you work with us. You're building your own franchise, you're self-employed. We're in zero contract. We're in 0 hour contract
territory. So he owns his own van and everything.
Yes, he owns his own van. And if he doesn't, if he doesn't make a drop off, if he tries to take a day off, he literally has to pay the price for that. So it just turns into this unbelievably stressful situation where he's working every hour of the day.
So I have a clip here which I think illustrates that. This is the former construction worker, Ricky Turner, plays by Chris Hitchens, and he talks to his hard-faced manager Gavin Maloney, played by Ross Brewster, about becoming a self-employed delivery driver on a freelance basis.
I'd rather work on my own now and be my own boss.
Have you ever been on the dole?
No, I've got my pride. I'd rather starve first.
Music to my ears, Ricky. Henry was right. You are a trooper. Let's just get a few things straight at the start, though, shall we? You don't get hired here. You come on board. We like to call it onboarding. You don't work for us. You work with us. You don't drive for us. You perform services. There's no employment contracts. There's no performance targets. You meet delivery standards. There's no wages, but fees. Is that clear?
Yeah.
Clear?
Yeah. It sounds all right, yeah. Good, yeah.
No clocking on, you become available. You sign up with us, you become an owner, driver, franchisee. Master of your own destiny, Ricky. You up for that?
Yeah, I've been waiting for an opportunity like this for ages.
Oh yeah, I'm sure he has. Chris Hitchens there, played by Ricky Turner, and Ross Brewster, played by Gavin Maloney. These, in the true legacy of Ken Loach, are not professional actors.
No, they're actually not. So we heard that that sort of mean boss there is actually a policeman in real life. Abby, who's played by Debbie Honeywood, who is Chris's, Ricky's wife, she was just found through a nationwide search. And like, she delivers an unbelievable performance. She is in a similarly difficult line of work. She is a carer. She's on a 0 hours contract. In order for Ricky to buy the van, which he needs for his job, she's had to sell her car. So now she spends her breaks travelling across Newcastle by bus, trying to meet people who she must refer to as clients, according to her boss, but she's not at all happy with. And in so doing, it's an inner travelling around. It's actually a very good film about different parts of society. We learn about the effects of disability cuts on people that she's visiting, the isolation that comes from that, and how difficult being a carer is as well. And even being a very busy working class mum, how organised she has to be. On her break, she's calling her daughter, Lisa Jane, who's played by Kate Proctor, telling her, OK, your lunch is here. There's a permission slip in your bag. Here's where you're going to heat up your dinner. Don't spend too long on the computer. And how much... huge amount of work has to go into being a job in which she's not working a job which she's not respected in.
Yes, let's listen to a clip of Debbie Honeywood, who plays Abby. Here she discusses the struggle of family and work life with elderly client Molly, played by Heather Wood.
Is that your house?
Should have been our house, but 10 years ago the Northern Rock crash happened.
Oh yeah.
Well, we had the mortgage, everything ready, all gone through, and then Ricky lost his job in the building trade. Couldn't get anything else. He's just gone from job to job and we've rented. Happened to a lot of people though, didn't it?
Oh, thousands.
But I need to run your bath. I'll get in trouble for this, you know.
Never.
Yeah, can't get friendly with the clients, and I hate that word.
What time's your next appointment like?
Well, I've got a 2 hour break.
I hope they pay you mind.
0 hour contract, I get paid for the visits.
Well, what about your travelling time?
I pay my own bus fare.
Hey, God. Hey, I'm just looking at this. 7:30 on the morning till 9 at night. We're up to be 8 hour day.
What happened the 8-hour day, indeed. That's Molly, played by Heather Wood, and Debbie Honeywood, who plays Abby. And she's the wife of Ricky Turner, who obviously they're having pressure at home,
yeah,
as well as because of the awful pressure they're on to keep their work life
together. As you even heard there, I mean, she's out of the house most of the day, not by her own choice. And there's also difficulty at home with their son, Seb, who's played by Rhys Stone. He's a classic teenager in some ways, very disconnected, won't really speak to his parents despite previously having an excellent relationship. He is not turning up to school. He's obsessed with graffiti and actually quite talented. His parents just don't understand that. He's engrossed in his phone despite his parents' best attempts and interventions. Things go poorly for him. He has a run in with the police.
So there's the Northern Rock, there's the flaws of the education system, there's the harrowing life that people have to live in,
yes,
this gig economy, all of those big issues. Do you still have the feel of the intimate story between the couple and the family?
Yeah, you certainly do. And that's down to Laverty and Loach. Whether it's their last film together, I, Daniel Blake, or this one, sometimes things can be a bit heavy-handed in their pictures, and sometimes they can be blinded by their politics. And what I mean by that is there's sequences that are purely set up and you can see it, where, you know, either Abby is visiting her clients, as she calls them, or Ricky is knocking on doors, delivering parcels and engaging in conversations. And we learn a little bit more about how every person in their life, every person in their neighbourhood, every person on their route is living. And that can get a bit much at times, but by the same turn, we then get these wonderful exchanges where Laverty and Loach remember, right, we need to have some lightness in here. And there are sequences where there's one great sequence where Ricky is delivering a parcel to a Newcastle United fan. He's a Manchester United fan, born and bred. And they just have this 2-minute exchange, all which is just full of football jokes, half of which I didn't get, but there's wonderful humour in there. And you need that lightness every now and then. So they do remember. And then even when they when you get the sequences where, Abby and Ricky are at home with their kids, you do get to see what kind of relationship they have at home away from work.
And the Gavin Maloney character, that's the boss or the guy who allows Ricky into the gig economy.
Yeah.
Is he seen as bad?
Well, yes, pretty much so. He's an odious human being. I mean, there is zero warmth, or zero flexibility or understanding.
And it's not like he's caught in the system as well.
No, he is directly profiting from it. You know, he is meeting all the targets and being the most successful centre in all of the UK through having no compassion or flexibility when human situations occur. Ricky has to pee in a bottle because he's not allowed to pull over and stop any time. You can't be late. You can't be sick. Even though you're self-employed, you incur huge fees and fines if you need to miss a day work through illness or if any of the equipment gets harmed through no fault of your own.
And Sarah, you were a bit uncomfortable with an altercation between Ricky and Seb, his son.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm sure you'll have heard from a conversation, this is an excellent film in terms of the macro issues as well as the micro issues. There's humour, there's everything. It's wonderful. There's a very strange 30 seconds, 1 minute where Ricky becomes abusive towards Seb. He punches him, and it is his teenage son, in the face. And then my feeling is that the film moves on from there. There's no further discussion of that between Seb and Ricky as to what that means in their relationship. And then Ricky is still seen as a sympathetic character. This domestic abuse incident happens seemingly as a way of showing of how tough a time Ricky is going through. But it seems to me that to say that domestic abuse is something that's okay or makes sense and is a natural product of stress misunderstands abuse and is overly sympathetic towards Ricky. And because there are no harms portrayed in the film of the abuse, because Ricky and Seb's relationship, you know, for the rest of the film actually only gets better, it doesn't seem to actually illustrate consequences of that abuse. And so Ricky's off the hook, and so abuse is seen to not have any actual consequences, and we know that not to be true in real life. And so I feel it's very reckless and actually out of keeping and disappointing for Ken Loach and Paul Laverty.
Did that upset you?
Not so much, because it is teased out during the film that he might have a bit of a temper, and you know, his wife is a little bit worried about Ricky might have a bit of a temper, and something might have happened before, whether it was with his friends, whether it was, you know, certainly not with the children, but something is teased out. But once that actually happens, and without giving too much away about, you know, the final third of this film, it's the beginning of, you know, a few different events that just where everything just goes sideways for the family, and in terms of their work and in terms of their home life. And I never found that I didn't come away from it thinking this hasn't been explained or everything's okay for them, because when, like every other Paul Laverty and Ken Loach film, when we clock off from it, I don't think everything's tied up. I would like to think that that was going to be discussed somewhere down the line, that we were just checking out, but that everything wasn't wrapped up. So I didn't feel as though it was cheating us in a way, and I didn't feel like it just came out of nowhere. I felt like we were kind of, you know, building up to that. And I also feel like that part of the story wasn't quite finished just yet.
So for you, Sorry We Missed You, stars out of 5, Chris.
Yeah, I thought it's grim. It's very grim, but it was powerful. It was beautifully scripted. I thought Chris Hitchin and Debbie Honeywood, non-professional actors, I can't get over that.
Appropriate to an Irish audience.
I thought they were outstanding. And yes, definitely appropriate to an Irish audience. I just thought it was a remarkable film. We'll go with 4 stars.
Sarah?
So I think this is a really great film. It's very useful. Worth pointing out that Paul Laverty spoke to hundreds of drivers for this film. This isn't a work of fiction. This is thoroughly researched, and this is what we're living in. So very important viewing for everyone. But because of how recklessly, in my perspective, abuse is treated, and the way that was not necessary and out of keeping with the rest of the film, 3 out of 5 stars.
So 3 out of 5 and 4 out of 5 for Sorry We Missed You. And our final film this evening is Brittany Runs a Marathon, in which a layabout 28-year-old woman discovers the joys of looking after herself. Sarah, talk us through the plot.
So Brittany is a fat woman, and because of being fat, she is sad. Well, that's not quite it, but I mean, that is more or less my sense of what the plot is. So she drinks a lot of alcohol. She's joking. She's always out for work. Things aren't going well for her professionally. She sort of blames her inability to focus on that. So she goes to the doctor to get prescribed Adderall. The doctor won't do that, won't quite play ball, but does say, look, what's your diet like? What's your level of exercise like? I'm concerned that you may have fatty liver disease. That prompts a level of introspection with her. She wants to go and get fit, but it's $120 for the gym, and she does not have that kind of money. So she is going outside for the run, and she eventually starts running. In the first scene, she runs around the corner, and then like the next scene, she runs 5K. So it's quite a swift progression into her being defined as a runner.
And it's a comedy.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it's technically a comedy.
I watched some of the clips. I thought it was quite
funny.
Yeah,
well, you know what? Maybe I just don't have any sense of humour, but what I did not find this film funny. It tittered in a couple of places, but overall I felt it was very, very try hard with the jokes, and not something that I laughed at all, I have to say.
Is it pushing on that old myth that if a woman loses weight, she'll be happy?
No, absolutely not, because I think Brittany is portrayed as being crippled with self-doubt and with anxiety, and she's a little bit depressed about her life being in a bit of a rut, because she believes that everyone around her has figured it out. Everyone's happy, but they're not. And she also, over the course of a year, she does lose the 55 pounds that the doctor asked her to. She does take up running. She, you know, becomes addicted to the running in the same way that she would have been, just like every, you know, addicted to going out every night with her friends, but she is still desperately unhappy at times. So I don't believe that the film ever kind of showed that like if you lose all this weight, you're going to be instantly happy. And I thought there was
Where did you find the humour?
I thought Gillian Bell, who is a terrific comic performer, but who's always in the past been cast as this real kooky, goofy psychic, sometimes I felt as though like her weight was the punchline itself, and she's never been able to show us her dramatic chops before. I thought she was terrific here dramatically, but I thought her comic timing, because I said the fact that she is crippled with self-doubt, she makes a lot of jokes when she's uncomfortable, and I thought her making jokes whenever she was trying to make new friends, I thought that there was a lot of great humour in that.
And just briefly, stars out of 5.
I thought this was terrific. Very charming, very funny, quite sweet, very moving, and one of the better, smarter comedies of this year. I'll go with 4.
And you, Sarah?
I'm shockingly and definitely saying 2 out of 5, I'm afraid.
I think she's shocked with you, Chris.
Yeah, I think the most interesting part of the film, which was that her injury and eating disorder wasn't explored, 2 out of 5.
2 out of 5. So 2 out of 5 and 4 out of 5 for Brittany Runs the Marathon. And Brittany Runs the Marathon and is on general release, as is Dr. Sleep. And Sorry We Missed You is on limited release.